Pandy had lost a great deal of her hair. One of her arms was missing. And generally speaking, she was a disaster. Pandy was Barb's favorite doll. Now, she hadn't always looked like this. Her face and hands were made of that plastic that kind of made them look real. And she had a beautiful painted face. But then the rest of her body was this kind of squishy doll. So it was like the perfect combination of like the good facial features. And at the same time, it was like the squishy, cuddly thing that you can snuggle. And Barb loved her doll. Barb loved her doll so much that when Barb went to bed, Pandy slept right next to her. And when Barb had lunch, Pandy ate right next to her. And didn't eat, but I mean, she would try to feed her. When Barb took a bath, many times Pandy got dunked and almost drowned. Like, it happened over and over again. And after about 2 years, Pandy was a mess. But Barb loved that little ragdoll. Just as strongly when she got it as years later when she looked like rags. Now, other dolls came and went, but Pandy was like part of the family. So one time, their family, they're living in Illinois, took a vacation to cold country up north and went to Canada. And as they traveled to Canada, they went and they stayed. They had a great time. They stayed at this hotel and saw the sights in this area. And the problem was they got all the way back to Illinois, crossed the state line, and they realized Pandy's missing. Dad thinks, oh no, what do I do? And he just stops. They search the car. They turn the car around and drive all the way back to Canada. This is a true story. They go to the hotel, they run to the clerk. You know when you're panicked and you run and you don't know why you're running, because running doesn't really make any sense other than it's going to save like 3 seconds and nothing really happens in 3 seconds anyway. So anyway, they're running and they're at the desk, they're at the with the clerk. Have you seen Pandy? And they have a picture of Barb holding Pandy. And they're like, no, we haven't seen Pandy. And they panic and they're like, can we use the key? Can we go to the room? They run to the room. No reason to run, but they run to the room. They scour the room. Pandy's nowhere. They're like, where else could we go? They run downstairs into the laundry area, and they go through sheet after sheet, dirty sheet after dirty. There's like, they finally found Pandy. She had almost been drowned to death as they were going to wash these sheets. She was almost washed to death. But here's, Barb loved Pandy so much that her parents said, we can't leave Pandy behind. She's part of the family. They had to go pick her up. They had to travel to a distant country to go retrieve Pandy. Now, as the years passed, Barb grew up. And the only logical thing left to do with Pandy, because she was such a disaster, was to throw her away. But Barb's mom couldn't get herself to throw Pandy away. So one day, when Barb was a little bit older and didn't really care about Pandy very much, Barb's mom took Pandy, got a box, shoe box, took that white paper that you'd wrap Christmas presents in, put Pandy inside, wrapped up Pandy, sealed it with tape, and put her in the attic. She stayed in the attic for 30 years. Now, it was the nature of Barb's love that made Pandy so valuable. Barb loved that doll with the kind of love that literally changes the world. And because if you loved Barb, it was like you transferred some of your love to that little bitty doll, because you knew how much Barb cared for that doll. Barb loved that doll. The tears, hugs, and secrets of all those years got mixed up in those rags somehow. So as the years passed, Barb gets married. And she has a couple kids. And when Barb's kid named Courtney got to the age where she wanted a doll, Courtney said, Mom, I want my first doll type thing. So Barb decided to go back to her home and pull out Pandy out of the attic. She cut open the box, unwrapped the paper, and at this point, Pandy is more rags than she is doll, okay? She is, I mean, she, the reality of the years had caught up to her. So Barb does what only Barb could really do. She sent Pandy away to a special place in California where they did, it was a doll hospital, and they did reconstructive surgery on Pandy. She got a facelift, a makeover, a brand new arm, the stuffing that had fallen out over the years got pushed back in, and they redid Pandy. And Pandy became beautiful again. It was possible for everybody around Barb to see, other people could see how Barb viewed that doll because Pandy was renewed. They could see what Barb always saw in her, maybe for the first time. So when Pandy was young, Barb loved her. When Pandy was old and ragged, Barb loved her all the more. And she didn't love Pandy because Pandy was beautiful. She loved Pandy with the kind of love that, where Pandy became beautiful because of that love. Does that make sense? Do you guys know that we're all rag dolls? Every single one of us, we're flawed and faltered and wounded and broken and beat up and bent. And ever since the fall, we've chosen to deceive and grumble and betray and lie and cheat and steal and everything else. And that raggedness permeates every bit of who we are. That raggedness. I'm a rag doll. And you're a rag doll too. But we are God's rag doll. And He loves us just like Barb loved Pandy. Just like that. He knows all about our raggedness, and yet He loves us anyway. So we weren't created ragged. From the beginning, there was wonder about human beings in the very beginning that even God said, "This is good. This is very good." There's wonder about human beings that the author of Genesis wrote about human beings that were created in the image of God. There's wonder about human beings that had the psalmist write that we were fearfully and wonderfully made. There's wonder about humanity. There's wonder about human beings. And there's wonder about you. Raggedness is not your identity. You might be unlovely, but you are not unloved. And you guys know that we can't be loved without being changed. We cannot be loved without being changed. And when people experience love, they begin to grow lovely. I've seen it in my own life. Like when somebody loves me and like my kids show me love, and that I grow, I become. I'm maturing, I'm becoming somebody in Christ. I begin to grow more lovely the more love I experience. Love turns rag dolls into priceless treasures. So there's a love that fastens itself to ragged little creatures for reasons nobody ever can quite figure out and makes them precious and valuable beyond calculation. This is what this series we're going to call A Love Beyond Logic. It's a love that doesn't make sense, that the rest of the world doesn't quite get. It is the true love of God. It's the love that God has for you and for me. And I want it to sink in my heart in a more profound, real way than ever before. Because love is why God created us in the first place. Theologians like Karl Barth, C.S. Lewis, Kierkegaard, they all speak of the fact that God created everything freely, not out of necessity. This is an important idea because God did not create us because God was bored. God did not create us because He was lonely. God did not create us because He ran out of things to do. God did not create us out of need. God created us out of love. Out of the depths of love became creation and human beings. Karl Barth said this. Sorry, not Karl Barth. C.S. Lewis wrote, God, who needs nothing, loves into existence wholly superfluous, unnecessary creatures in order that he might love and perfect them. He wrote that in the Four Loves. But the full extent of God's love was not shown in creation. It was shown when we had become sinful and unlovely. Paul said this well. He said, this is Romans 5:8, God proves his love for us, and while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. He died for us while we were ragged, while we were weak, while we were sinful and shameful. You guys, God is fully aware of your raggedness. God's fully aware that we're all ragdolls. Isaiah said this 2,700 years ago. He said, all of us have become like one who is unclean, and all of our righteous acts are like filthy rags. Every one of us have become filthy rags. We're just ragged, damaged by sin and shame. And so God proposes some reconstructive surgery, just like Pandy. So I had some reconstructive surgery when I was 23, and I want to tell you about that. So when I was 7, I was playing football in the living room. My parents were gone, and my older brother Steve was watching all me and my siblings, and we decided to play football, which that was forbidden in our house, okay? And so we're playing football, and my brother Steve throws the ball. My best friend Darren, and he lived right next door to us, same age as me, same grade. He came over, and then I have I have my older brother, two younger brothers, and a sister. So my sister was kind of sitting on the sidelines, and all the guys are playing football. So Steve throws me a long pass, and I felt like I was in the NFL. There's those moments where you're like, no matter what, I'm going to catch this. So I dove, okay? As I dove, I thought I was catching the ball, but I was actually catching a wooden chair in the kitchen, the dining room. And that wooden chair that I was catching hit me right in the middle of the forehead, and I started to bleed everywhere, okay? It was like one of those, it was a gusher. Parents weren't home. Darren ran to get his mom, and I remember lying in the ground, like blood everywhere, saying, Jesus, help me. I remember this moment quite well. And I was actually praying, God, help me when my parents find out that we were playing football in the living room. And so, anyway, I'm lying on the ground. They take me to the hospital, and they stitch me up, but it took hours for me to get in. And so, from the time I was 7 till I was 23, I had this thing, this it looked like an eternal zit in the middle of my forehead that would never go away. So as a youngster, every picture that you ever see of me, I have bangs. Like this, to cover this thing that looked like a zit. I know. But guess what? I was 23. I graduated from college, and I talked to my mom, and I said, Mom, what if I have a doctor fix this? I heard they can do stuff like that. And she's like, sure. So I drove to this other town, and they laid me out, and they cut me open, and they stitched me back together. The repair was broken. All of a sudden, goodbye bangs, hello beauty. Like, I was a new man. Like, I didn't have to have bangs anymore, right? Actually, this is true. Like, I actually had people say, I had a friend that was like, can I get that zit real quick? I'm like, no, it's a scar. Don't do it. But I felt like a new man. I had undergone reconstructive surgery. God makes a place where we can exchange our brokenness and filthy rags and shame and our sin that left us so unlovely. There really is a place, guys, where that happens, where God does reconstructive surgery, and it's called the cross. The cross. There are in the New Testament two commands that form the very heart of our response to God's love. And these cannot be separated. The whole of God's will comes down to this. Jesus said, in Luke 10:27, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. A primary form of loving God in the Bible is loving people who mean so much to God. In the words of Jesus, whatever you've done for the least of these, you've done to me. God says, love me and love my ragdolls. And you can't separate those two. So every once in a while, I meet somebody and they're like, I love God so much and I hate everybody else. Now, they don't say it that way, but every bit of action and how they treat and how they look at other people and how they judge, every bit says that they hate everybody else, except maybe one or a couple people. And Jesus is saying that's not okay. Actually, he's saying this in the same breath. If you're going to do one, you must do the other. It's you can't separate these two commands. God says, love me, love my ragdolls. It's a package deal. So if we're serious about loving God, we must begin with people, all people, especially those who the world generally discards. In Jesus' day, it was people that were most aware of their raggedness, that were open to his love. And so if you've got your Bibles, turn to Luke 7. This is going to be our main text this morning. Turn there. Luke 7, we're going to start in verse 36. You're going to have to help me in the back, Mariah. When one of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him, he went to the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table. A woman in that town who lived a sinful life learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house. So she came there with an alabaster jar of perfume. As she stood behind him at his feet weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. Then she wiped them with her hair, kissing them and pouring perfume on them. When the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, if this man were a prophet, he would know who is touching him and what kind of woman she is. She's a sinner. Jesus should know she's a sinner. And you can't have a sinner touching you like you're a holy man. Luke tells us she was a sinner, which is most likely a really polite way of saying she's a hooker. She was an uninvited guest. She's scandalizing everybody at this table. Everybody's scandalized by her presence except the one truly holy person at the table. She had lost her reputation, her virtue. You could say her stuffing's been knocked out of her by just like Pandy. She hadn't always looked like this. There was a day when she was somebody's little girl. She had dreams, I'm pretty sure. But that day and that time was a long, long time ago. And it took all the courage she had to simply brave the looks and the whispers that happened in that room. She stood behind Jesus at his feet. And you have to understand historically, so we think of a dinner party today and we think of people sitting at a table with, like, sitting properly. Well, back then, it wasn't like that. You know what they did? They laid down. They reclined. Nobody can see me. They're probably more like this. So they reclined. And so your upper body would be toward the table. Your feet would be extended outward. And actually, I think, I want a dinner party like that. I should do that. It would be awesome. So that's how they just didn't have, historically we know that they didn't have chairs like we have them today. They laid back, they reclined. And a meal was most likely over a matter of hours. So this woman, she's at Jesus' feet. She had bought perfume to anoint Jesus. And she's at Jesus' feet, standing up there, and she finds herself in the presence of God, in the presence of Jesus, and she can't help herself. As she's there with Jesus, her eyes start to leak. And she can't help but tears start welling up and they start falling on his feet. She didn't intend to do that. It just happened. She's with Jesus and she just can't take it. So much pain, so much wounding, so much emotion, and she just, her eyes leak everywhere, all over his feet. And then she was probably there for long enough as her eyes are leaking all over his feet, and she's like, well, what do I do next? So she barely had space or time to open up this perfume that she really wanted to do. That was her act. She wanted to anoint Jesus. So she gets this perfume open and she pours it on Jesus' feet. So maybe she was thinking through those tears, like, I wonder if Jesus knows how I earned this and bought this perfume. Or I wonder if she was thinking of the little girl that she once was. Or I wonder if she was thinking about the gap between who she was and who she wants to be. Then trying to make things better, she does something that makes everything worse, at least for everybody there except Jesus. And here's what she does. She lets down her hair. So this is something that no decent woman would ever consider doing in public 2,000 years ago in Israel. You'd never do this. It was never done. It was a violation of a social custom. No respectable Jewish woman would ever do this. They had their hair bound in public. But she did know in the past she had let down her hair a lot. She, as a prostitute, she let down her hair quite a few times. And each time that she did that, there was another wound in her heart and another scar in her soul. But this time, as she lets down her hair, it was an act of true worship. An act of true love to dry the feet of one that she had bathed with her tears. Guys, this is her last time to let down her hair, and this time she got it right. Her days of raggedness are about to come to an end. And as the story goes on, Luke, starting verse 44, then he turned towards the woman. This is Jesus. So Jesus is there. He turns towards the woman, but we realize he's actually talking to the Pharisee, to Simon here. He turns to the woman and he said to Simon, do you see this woman? I came to your house and you did not give me any water for my feet, but she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You did not give me a kiss, but this woman from the time I entered has not stopped kissing my feet. You did not put oil on my head, but she has poured perfume on my feet. Therefore, I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven, as her great love has shown. But whoever has been forgiven little loves little. Then Jesus said to her, your sins are forgiven. Jesus is scandalously ready to forgive here. Scandalously ready. He understands that Simon doesn't understand, that there is authentic worship and love and repentance coming out of this woman. And what does Jesus do? He turns the tables on Simon, on this Pharisee. Simon is the guilty one here, Jesus says. He's guilty of poor hospitality. He's guilty of neglect. He is guilty of no love. Jesus calls him out here. And you have to understand, a Pharisee is like the ruling religious elite of Jesus' day. He's like the pastor of the synagogue, of the church. And Jesus is calling this guy out, saying, it's not right. It's not so. You can't look down upon her. Are you kidding me? Look at what she's done. This Pharisee has never come to terms with the depths of his own heart. And so he doesn't appreciate God's generous love at all. Simon couldn't receive much love because he clung to the notion that he didn't need any love. His very sense of moral and spiritual superiority had caused him to be blind to his raggedness. And so his heart has become more unloving and more unlovely than even the sinner that he was despising. You know, sometimes a church is more like Simon the Pharisee than we are like this woman. And this makes me super sad. Like, I think about God's heart for the church today, and I think about who we are as God's people. And sometimes we look up to like the religious elite that have no love. And if there's ever a fruit of following Jesus, it's our heart to see people, to love the raggedness in other people. So what should have happened in this story? I think about that a lot. Like, here's what happened. What should have happened here? I think as this woman poured this perfume and tears went all over Jesus' feet in that humble, affectionate, loving way, I think everybody at that dining room, at that table, should have got up one at a time and gone over to this woman and said, "Hey, can I follow in your footsteps? Can I do what you did? Can you save a drop of that perfume for me to pour on Jesus? Because I see your act of love and I want to participate. Thank you for leading me. Thank you for showing me how to worship. Thank you for showing me how to connect with God." And yet, there's a complete lack of acknowledgement that this woman's deed has not only changed her, but changed this whole, changed how we think we should connect with God. I wish that they could have just said, "Can I follow your example? Can you save some for me? He forgave me all my sins. Can I follow you? He invited me into kingdom life, and it's awesome. Let me follow in your example." But it didn't happen. So the question is, who do we resemble more? The arrogant, critical Pharisee or this woman? Because the woman knew all about who she was, and she knew that Jesus knew all about her, and yet Jesus loved her anyway. She knew that. And so she's transformed. Jesus says in verse 48, "Your sins are forgiven." Verse 50, Jesus says, "Your faith has saved you. Go in peace." Jesus is saying, she's a rag doll, but she's my rag doll. Love me, love my rag dolls. It's a package deal. It's a package deal. And so the question is, where's our love pointed to today? Where are our hearts? So I want this to sink in. So if we can, just follow me just for a minute. We're going to divide you guys into two groups. I know there's three sections here, but this section and this half. So Eric, you're like the middle. So you have to choose one side or the other. Okay. So this whole group right there. Yep. Trevor, you two, like, choose one or the other. Yep. Go. Okay. Good. Good. Okay. You have to pick this side or that side. Okay. So this side, I want you to say this. I want you to say, "She's a sinner." So whenever I point to you, I want you to say, "She's a sinner." But wait, you can't just say it. You have to say it with contempt. You have to say it with judgment. You have to say it with condemnation. Okay, you guys ready? Whenever I point to you, you have to be ready. You have to be ready, ready?
"She's a sinner."
Oh, that is good. I felt the contempt. I felt it. Oh, wait, let me test you.
"She's a sinner.
Good, good, good. Okay, perfect. And this side, when I point to you guys, I want you to say, "Love me and love my ragdolls." You guys ready?
"Love me and love my ragdolls."
Awesome. I want you to know that this report is dramatically different than this side. This side is a report that you don't hear. It's actually not even very common in God's church, which is super sad. But this response is God's response that we are called into. Let me hear it again.
Jesus is here.
Good.
Love me, love my rebels.
Awesome. So I have a question. Which voice are you listening to?
Jesus is here.
Love me, love my rebels.
Which voice are you lending your ear to? Which voice are you?
Jesus here.
Love me, love my rebels.
Our culture says.
Jesus here.
Our modern day Pharisees say.
Jesus here.
Our judges say.
Jesus here.
Our condemners say.
Jesus here.
And Jesus says.
Love me, love my rebels.
It's a huge difference, guys. What if we could get it? What if we could get this? Because we could change the city. We could change Louisiana. We could change this nation. But we got to get this thing. And the crazy thing is that the whole religious system 2,000 years ago missed it. And one of my biggest fears is that the church misses it today. Because there's a love that takes rag dolls like me and you and loves us beyond logic. Love me, love my rag dolls, God says. It's a package deal. So let me give you a couple practical tips today. One, if you let him, God will begin to do reconstructive surgery on you one day until, watch out, 1 John 3, 1 will happen in your life. See what the love the Father has given us, that we should be called children of God, and that is who we are, beloved. We are God's children now, that what we will be has not yet been revealed. And the biggest issue for us to get there, that reconstructive surgery, can only happen if we acknowledge where our heart is really at in any given moment. Where's our heart? What's there? What's behind the scenes? What are the thoughts that nobody else hears? I think that God, if you let him, God will do some reconstructive surgery, and in the end you will say, I can't believe God's restored my loveliness once again. God's restored and renewed my soul, my heart. But this is a permission thing. You've got to say, God, yes, I'm choosing to go there. I'm choosing to go there. Number two, when the kingdom breaks in, we see surprising grace, exuberant generosity, unmasking authenticity, abundant love, extravagant acceptance, real freedom. But guess what we also experience? Fierce opposition like Simon the Pharisee. When the kingdom breaks in, no matter what, you will start experiencing God's inbreaking radical rule and reign. You'll experience surprising grace in your life. And you will have surprising grace. You will see it and you will tell other people about it, and you will be a beacon of hope in other people's lives. You will see exuberant generosity, unmasking authenticity. You will see that lot of stuff. But guess what you'll also experience? You'll experience people like Simon the Pharisee that wave their finger and say, you can't. No way. You'll experience stoppers over and over and over again. And so, be aware that there are stoppers out there. There's just stoppers. People that don't want it to be that simple. What, a heart change? Are you kidding me? And my wife, this is my wife's thought at the end, but she says super annoying. And it is. It is, right? So, God's upside down kingdom, everything that the world has a tendency to want to put us into a box and say, this is who you are and this is how you need to respond. And Jesus just came and turned it all upside down. And he says, there's a whole new kingdom. But if you're not in the God's kingdom, there's this religious mentality that just wants to fight tooth and nail against grace, against mercy, against reconciliation, against generosity. So be aware, you will experience religious elite like Simon the Pharisee. Jesus experienced some fierce opposition. And sometimes it just happens, so be aware. And number three, journey or think about this story from Luke 7, and ask yourself right now in your life, are you more like the arrogant, critical Pharisee like Simon, or are you a little more like this woman? And I would encourage you to journal about this. So you can answer it in your brain right now, but I encourage you to journal. Take 20 minutes and just journal about this. Who am I more like? Put it on the top there. Maybe read the story once again. And what does God want to say about this? Put yourself under the same scrutiny and judgment you put others on. So, if I'm honest with myself, I used to be a lot like the Pharisee that you read in this story. I looked down upon others. I criticized. I could pick out everybody's sins, but I couldn't see any of mine. And God had to do an inner deep work in me to realize that I am the one in needing of God's grace. I need this. So choose to look through the lens of radical love. It'll change the world right there.